Today is the 5th of December, Yom Besin Talamata Livracha, and Hay of Kislev, Tavshin Ayin Zayin. So we are up to Musar Day of Perek Yud Beis of Sefer Shmos. And over the course of Yud Beis, on Friday we learned the halachos of making matzah, and now we learn a little bit about the hashkafa of eating matzah, some of the philosophy behind eating matzah. And there is an odd thing with regards to matzah. Like the general, if you were to ask a child on the street, well, if you ask most children on the street, they might run away. But if you ask a Jewish child on the street on the way home from Cheder, and ask them, why do we eat matzah on Seder night? So what is the quick answer they would give you? And it's got pretty strong basis. What do we got? Because but they have to leave quickly, right? You have to leave quickly. So that's wonderful. That's not wrong. That's actually found also over the course of this parak. That says towards the end of this parak that they find it. Parak Yud Beis Pasuk. Pasuk Lamed Tes, Ve'afuas Habatzeka, Sheyotim Yisrael Gos Masos Kilo Chametz, that they baked the dough they took out of Egypt into matzah, because they couldn't be leavenless, they were driven out very quickly. They're driven out of Egypt, they couldn't delay, and nor had they made provisions for themselves. That's in Pasuk Lamed Tes. The problem is that if that was the case, that it was all about, but we want to remember that when we left Egypt, we didn't have time to bake matzahs, we left so quickly. There's an obvious question from earlier in this parak, and that is, why did you need to eat matzah?
Well, we were told before.
Yeah, that Seder, which they had the night before, matzah was eaten at that Seder. So it can't just be about, now we're leaving, and therefore we're recalling the fact that we left so quickly. There has to be something about the mitzvah of eating matzah the night before. So that is a question that, I've wondered about that for a while. So beyond that, it's not just, so we'll have a hashkafish here about, why do we eat the matzah? It actually might have real halachic ramifications, because we have a line that we say towards the end of Maggid. Generally when we say this line, we're thinking, Maggid's about to end, we're probably going to get to eat soon. You say, Rabbi Gamliel, Hay Omer Kol, if you don't say these three things over the course of Seder night, you haven't fulfilled your obligation, right? Pesach, Matzah, Umar. So what does he mean by that? What is the obligation that you need to fulfill by saying those three things? Ever thought about that? Right? Rabbi Gamliel said, if you haven't said these three things, you haven't fulfilled your obligation. You're not Yosei De Chovasan. You haven't fulfilled. So, what is that? What chiyuv? What chiyuv are you fulfilling by saying those three words? Pesach, Matzah, Mar. Anyone? What chiyuv? So the what? So generally, the quick answer, and the way we probably paskin, is that you haven't fulfilled your mitzvah of Maggid. You have a mitzvah of telling over the story, and part of the mitzvah of telling over that story is then to relate it to mitzvahs. So that is the way most understand it. The Ramban, however, understands it the opposite. If you don't say these three things, you haven't fulfilled your mitzvah of matzah. That in order to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of maror, you have to know why you're eating it. You have to know the reasons behind it. So, and I think that makes sense, because what's the thing that we do right after saying Pesach, Matzah, Maror? We say a little bit of Hallel, and then we head right into the mitzvahs of Matzah, Maror, and then eating them together. So it behooves us to know why we're eating matzah in order to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah. So the truth is, in that parak, what pasuk does it quote in that parak? When we say matzah, al shuma, why do we eat matzah? So we look in the Haggadah, it tells you the reason is because it quotes the pasuk later on over the course of the parak, that they left into the midbar very, very quickly. And that's what it says over the course of that parak that we want. It quotes this pasuk, like, that whole pasuk is quoted in that section at the end of Maggid. But then you can ask a question in the Seder itself. Okay, if we're eating it because we left very quickly, why did they eat matzah the night of the Seder? What is there to gain from that eating? So the Maharal. The Maharal in the Sefer Gvuras Hashem. The Gvuras Hashem is the Maharal Sefer on Pesach. It is not a slim Sefer. On chapter after chapter after chapter about different issues with regards to Pesach itself. Each chapter in itself is its own shir that you could give. This is from Perek Nun Aleph. So you realize how many, and this is, and this, I think there's Ayin, I think there's 70 something in the book. So he makes the point that what is so. The Maharal.
Oh, this is the Maharal, wow.
All right. Hey. Bruce is in. So what does the Maharal say? The Maharal says, Kimasha, you yotzin b'chipazon b'li hemshech zman, morishi yotzin b'madrega uv'mala elyona. The fact that they left very, very quickly teaches us that they left at a very high level. Ba'pal sheba misham nasa b'li zman, to the point that which they did was timeless. That the idea of making matzah, that matzah has to be made in a time when it doesn't have the ability to rise, indicates that it is, in a way, above time. It is sort of God food. A food that you can only get from not being involved in time. As opposed to lokamot, varm hatvayim, chakopu lasa behemshech zman, not like regular things where all of their actions have to do with the time. Aval kan hayagu lasam shelo beteva, ulkach haya bechipazon belizman. That here their geula was going to be not normal, and how do you symbolize that it's not normal? By eating matzah, which is not a normal food. Why is it not a normal food? Because most food takes some time in order to get it ready, and matzah takes, well, we don't say zero time, it does take a little bit of time, but it symbolizes the idea of timelessness. And perhaps that's the idea.
I would think it's more time bound than normal food. Because let's say bread, you know, rises, you can go for many, many minutes afterwards. But this is cut off in 18 minutes. More time.
I mean, the fact that time is such an integral part of it,
right.
It indicates its timefulness.
Yeah.
So the Maharal is saying, the fact that we're limited to such a short amount of time is its timelessness. If you were to just make one matzah, if you were to look at a matzah factory, and you went to a matzah factory and said, I need one matzah, it would take them about 18 seconds to make. I mean, it's that fast. The amount of time that those matzahs spend in an oven is like 7 or 8 seconds. I mean, really nothing. It goes in and you've seen?
Very hot, yeah.
Yeah, it's very hot. It gets baked very, very, very quickly. So,
burn it with nothing.
Yeah, and it bursts into flame. If you leave it in too long, it explodes. If he sees that he burnt one, he shoves it over a little bit and you see. 18 minutes is the maximum amount of time. The way we make matzah, it takes moments. The truth is, over the last couple of years, it's become starting to enter the markets a little bit, the idea of the soft matzahs. That our hard matzahs, the matzahs that we eat, which is that you can crack, is somewhat of a newer invention. If you see the movie The Ten Commandments, at the Seder that they have, they're not eating hard matzah. I think, if I recall, they're eating like pitas. So at first glance, you look at a thing like they're a bunch of amaratzim, but that's actually what the original matzahs were. Not necessarily our pitas that are left to grow, but if you take a slab of dough, not so thick, just a small amount of dough, and instead of putting it into an 800 degree oven for 15 seconds, you put it into a 350, 400 degree oven for a couple of minutes, so you actually get pita or lafas, like you get those at Israeli stores, those lafa breads. That's probably the type of matzah that they're eating back in the day. The reason that the hard matzahs came into style in Europe, I believe, although I think there's some dispute about this, is because they needed to start baking it way in advance. They had trouble. The Jews, I don't believe, were able to own ovens. They had to kind of rent the ovens from the non-Jewish bakeries, and therefore they had to do it in advance. And by doing it in this hard way, it doesn't spoil. In fact, we still have shmur matzah from last Pesach. Tovia became a big fan of shmur matzah. He eats it even during the year. So we have a couple of pieces left in our last box, I noticed last night. But it still is able to last for a long, long time. But anyways, the making of it...
18 minutes doesn't refer to baking time.
No,
it's time when it first starts to mix.
Yes, 18 minutes is the maximum amount of time from from the beginning of from the mix of water to flour to oven. But in a regular matzah factory, it does not happen that slowly. It goes much, much faster. What?
Does the 18 minutes start when you put it in the oven?
No, 18 minutes starts from when you mix the flour and the water together. But if you go to a matzah factory, a hand matzah factory, they mix it together and then they make the dough in 35 seconds and they pass it out to the 30 people that have rolling pins ready to roll them, and immediately put in more flour and more water. So that flour and that water is not going to have the 18 minutes. That's going to have 18 minutes minus whatever you've already taken up so far, but they continue to add more and more. It goes in 18 minute spurts. But each molecule of a flour grain to oven is about 30 seconds, 40 seconds, a minute, something like that. Okay, so that's the idea of the matzah. And so the matzah, so perhaps the idea is, and we'll see about, well, I'll get to that, the Rub's idea in a second. But this idea was the idea of timelessness. So then he asked, so why is it then that we have the mitzvah of eating matzah is only the first night, but the prohibition of eating chametz is for all 7 days over the course of Pesach? So the way he explains it is that, well, it's a way of going down a level. That we have a mitzvah to recognize this the first night, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we are really living l'mala min hateva, but over the course of the duration of Pesach, so it develops into a recognition that, yeah, that's out there, but we kind of begin taking over a little bit. So we have the prohibition of chametz still in effect, but we don't have a mitzvah of matzah continuously throughout the duration of Pesach. The Rabbi Acher Kach Aleinu Lavor Behadarga Ayidei Hayhimnus Milech LaChametz Yisponus BeYisurik Deilis Ragel B'Mavet Shelo Ateva Madigla Olam Ela Kol Ratzon Hashem Bilti Emtzai, that we don't eat chametz to recognize this idea that we to recognize the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really running the entire world. We don't eat anything that takes time, but we don't have a mitzvah to physically go and eat something that doesn't take time.
Why exactly did we have to rush to get out of it? I mean, it says Egypt imposed itself strongly upon the people to hasten to send them out of the land.
Mm-hmm.
We're not beholden to Egypt. We're in control.
But just because why do we have to leave very quickly? Yeah. Yeah. So that is
usually.
Yeah. So that is the Rav's. So that's from found that in the Sefer Sifsei Chaim in Chelik Beis Simin Shin on page Shin Mem Gimel Shin Mem Beis Shin Mem Gimel Shin Mem Dalet. But the Rav has a different piece. The Rav has two other aspects with regards to the eating of matzah. And he points out that in the Rambam, in his description of eating matzah, so on one hand he says the phrasing of was we didn't have time in order to eat it because we had this time of gula, and we didn't have time to cook, and we had to leave very quickly. That's what he says in one of his descriptions of the eating of matzah. In another description, that's in Perek Ches of Hilchos Chametz Matzah, in Perek Zayin of Hilchos Chametz Matzah, he says, why do we eat matzah on Seder night? Al Shem Shnigalu, because we had a geula. And that's all he says. It's because of our geula, that's why we left. That's why we have a mitzvah of matzah. And how does one define a geula? So the Rav says, and this is, I gotta think about how to reply to other points, geulas by definition happen, beharifayim. They happen very quickly. That's the way he said. In my opinion, I really want to say that genuine geula, genuine redemption, always comes suddenly, unexpectedly, at a time when people are ready to give up hope. Sometimes historical situations continue to deteriorate, people pray and cry begging for mercy, and there is no answer, and all of a sudden, at the moment when they think it's not going to happen, that's when the geula comes and happens. So the way we think about Yetzias Mitzrayim, I think, and we even saw some hints to that in our learning, is that the Jews are there, and the Jews stopped working already from Rosh Hashanah, and it seems like they're getting ready for Geula. So the Rav seems to be going against that idea. The Rav is saying, no, they might not have been working for a while, but they didn't think the Geula was coming. They didn't realize the Geula was coming. What do you mean? They had a Seder that night. They had a Korban Pesach that night. So something very interesting. He doesn't develop this as fully as I will, but I think if you look deep into it, it really brings a whole new perspective. How do we begin the Seder? How do we begin at the Seder? How do we begin Magid? What's the first thing we say? well, make Kiddush, but the Magid section, the beginning of telling over of Yetzias Mitzrayim, what's the first thing we say at the Seder? No. Before that, in the section of Magid, we were slaves as a response to the Manishtana. But even before Manishtana, what do we say? We say a paragraph of Halach Ma'anya, right? We say that paragraph of Halach Ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread, which we ate in Mitzrayim, and there it says in that paragraph, and we left very quickly. It says there that we hurriedly went and we left quickly. That's what he points out. It says that we see that we had to leave quickly. But I think even more so, if we think about that paragraph, it doesn't fit very well. It doesn't fit halachos very well. Why is that? First of all, question A everybody always asks is why if everyone introduces it as, oh, we're about to start the Seder, therefore we want to invite other people to join us at the Seder. But there's a problem with that. We already did a few mitzvahs. We already did the first cup of wine. We already filled up the second cup of wine. And in fact, even beyond that, the idea of Seder itself is generally a mitzvah that we have to have prepared. That it has to be set up who's going to be coming for the Seder. So what does it mean all of a sudden we're beginning Makid and we say, oh, whoever needs can come and eat. You're saying it at your Seder table. It's not like you're even going outside and announcing to the world, last call for the Seder! Right, you don't do anything like that. We just say it around our table. So what kind of meaning does that have as an invitation to a person who perhaps doesn't have an invitation to a Seder yet? So I once heard this many years ago from Rabbi Menachem Litek, pointed out that this isn't really an invitation to the world at large. We're not really doing that now. There is one, we're beginning the reenaction of leaving Egypt. Why? So in Halach Ma'anya we say that Kol Dichvin Yisei V'Yichol, Kol Dichvin Yisei V'Yipsach, all who want can come and eat, and all who want can come and partake of the Korban Pesach. Right? What's the next line? Hashta Hacha L'Shana Haba B'Yerushalayim. Hashta Avdin L'Shana Haba B'nei Chorin. Say, this year we're here, and next year we're going to be in Yerushalayim. Yeah. This year we're slaves, and next year we're going to be free. Tell me, if one is not in Yerushalayim, are you allowed to eat a Korban Pesach? If you're not in Yerushalayim, are you allowed to eat a Korban Pesach? No. The Korban Pesach has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. So how does that paragraph make any sense? Come, whoever wants can come and join and eat the Korban Pesach. This year we're here, and next year we're going to be in Yerushalayim. When did that happen? How could that be? If you're not in Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. Except, what's the one? Except for the first one. Except for the first Pesach. The first Pesach, and in fact the second Pesach also, but the first Pesach is the only Pesach in history where people said, this year we're here, and next year we're going to be in Yerushalayim. This year we're eating the Korban Pesach, even though we're not in Yerushalayim. But next year we'll be in Yerushalayim, and we'll eat the Korban Pesach there. Now, maybe it's talking about there is a second year. The first year in the Midbar, they also made a Korban Pesach. But what else did they say? The very last paragraph, I never noticed this until today. The last line of that paragraph is what? Hashta Avda L'Shana Haba B'nei Chorav. This year we're slaves, and next year we're going to be free. Tell me, the night of the first Leil Seder, were they still slaves? So according to the way we said it as, oh well, they haven't been working since Rosh Hashanah, and during the time of the plagues they didn't have to worry about work, etc. So they weren't slaves. So what does that paragraph mean? The answer is no, they were slaves. They were still slaves. They were still stuck in Egypt. Their Makas Bechoros is supposed to happen tonight, and the next day they're supposed to leave. Who said? They didn't know that. They were told to bring a Korban Pesach. They were told to get a bris. Were they told, oh, go and bring a bris, and they were told to eat matzah. Were they told, go and eat matzah because you're going to have to leave very quickly? No, they were told, go and eat matzah. That's the mitzvah. The mitzvah of Seder nights, of that Seder night in Egypt, was independent of the fact that they're going to be leaving the next day. And that's what the Rav is pointing out here. That the idea of matzah is not just about remembering that we left quickly, but remembering that the idea of geula, the idea of redemption, is, by definition, leaving quickly. by definition, leave in quickly. That is integral to the idea of geula. I was just thinking that Israel had two major wars in terms of establishing its territory. Number one is the War of Independence, and number two is the War of the Six-Day War. Right? War of Independence when they established the land, and then Six-Day War is when they expanded it to. So at the end of the Six-Day War, there were many shilas over the course of that summer. The Six-Day War happened in June, so Shavuos was, I think, a week or two later. Shavuos was the first time that they really opened the Kotel for the public to go and see. And then a little bit more than two months after Shavuos, is something called Tisha B'Av. And that summer, everybody raised all these issues. Well, should we still be saying Tisha B'Av? Should we still be saying Nachim? In the course of Nachim, it says that Yerushalayim is sitting in its Avelus, in its morning state, but it's not in its morning state. We just recaptured the whole thing. So how can we possibly say that paragraph? So all those questions rose during the summer of 1967. And Rav Gorin has a piece about it. Rav Soloveitchik has comments about it. Many have comments about that summer. You didn't see anybody raise that issue at the end of 1948. 1948, you didn't hear those halachic issues weren't raised. Oh, maybe we should stop, we should adjust our some of our liturgy because it doesn't quite match up. They didn't say it in 1948. Why? So I was thinking, because 1967 happened in 6 days. The Six-Day War. It happened so fast. And not only did it happen so fast, it went from Shibud to Geula. The days leading up to it, people in this room probably remember, were days of nervousness, were days of fear, were days of what's going to be, the days that we're about to lose a war, and all of a sudden, within really in 2 hours, the entire trajectory of the war changed, and it was from that point on. I mean, there was a lot of difficulties and heroism that came in the 6 days that followed, but really within 2 hours, the whole idea had changed. The whole thought about what was going to be had changed, as opposed to the War for Independence, which was a war of attrition, which was went on for months and months and months, and different parts of the land had different reactions to the war. Of Gorin and his memoirs discusses that he was in Yerushalayim during the War for Independence, and at some point during that time he went to Tel Aviv during the War for Independence. Yerushalayim is under siege, and when you're under siege, so you think everybody's under siege. All of a sudden you end up in Tel Aviv, and everybody's walking the streets, and there's food available, and you can eat whatever you want. At different points in different parts of the country had different reactions to the war. So the War for Independence was obviously important, but didn't have the same idea of geula attached to it that the Six-Day War had those almost 20 years later. Yeah?
Line 17 says, "You shall safeguard the matzos on the very day I will take you to Egypt out of the land of Egypt." So he's telling Hashem is telling us in advance that
Well, you have to be careful. That was told to Moshe.
Right.
That was told to Moshe. Was that told to everybody else?
It does seem like it comes as a surprise, because all of a sudden it says it happened on a very day.
The only thing Moshe told them was that this is going to remember the idea that God went over your houses. If you look, Moshe does not mention. Yeah, that's right. I was wondering, does Hashem mention the idea of leaving Egypt anywhere else in the parak? So yes, you're right. Hashem does mention it to Moshe, but Moshe did not mention it to the Jew. So while Moshe may have known, and that's actually an interesting question, why doesn't Moshe tell them? But the fact is that Moshe didn't tell them. All the people knew was that we were going to have the Korban Pesach. What was going to come about from the Korban Pesach was only that our house was going to be spared while the other houses were not going to be spared. But it doesn't seem like they realize that, and this is it, and tonight we're leaving. That doesn't seem to be part of the narrative to them.
How about the fact that we were at the
49th level of Tumah? Yeah, so I can only deal with the pshat. I don't do what's going on here in the Moshe. That's not, I mean, whatever that means, it means. Okay. So it's difficult to understand what that means if they had just brought Korban Pesach and just had Mila, and then they're at the 49th level of Tumah. Right. So it could be that they couldn't, meaning the 49th Tumah, I have to look carefully what that Medrash means, actually says. It could be that the 49th level of Tumah, until Hashem came to Moshe and said, okay, now we're going to begin the Geula process. or that the 49th loaf of Tumah until Hashem came to Moshe and said, now they're going to bring the Korban Pesach. But to say that after bringing the Korban Pesach and after being saved that night, they're at the 49th, they're still at the 49th loaf of Tumah? That's a little, why would that be? Well, what would that mean? Yeah.
We're just saying, I mean, the Korban Pesach and the Christmas are like the finale of all the plagues, you know, and the Egyptians have lost their control over you, and, but you said then at the next phase to leave, the other one was,
okay.
And the finale is that all the Egyptians in the first one being killed, and you do this, and you won't be killed, it's like in your face now, I mean, like, everybody's weeping and wanting really upset, and you're being saved.
Okay, the Rav has one other idea within this his parak here about the symbolism of matzah. He says al pi Kabbalah, the idea of matzah is the food of emunah. How is it the food of emunah? And why is it then? Then you understand why specifically it's connected to leaving Egypt. I mean, if it's only about the matzah they ate that night, they ate matzah that night. But with regards to the idea of leaving Egypt, so you think about the amount of emunah that it took for the Jewish people to leave Egypt. I mean, they're leaving civilization and marching out into the desert. 2 million, 3 million people. What's going to be? The only thing that they had was some matzah which they had baked. So that little amount of matzah symbolized the amount of emunah that they had. Yeah, we're bringing out some matzah with us, but we realize that we're not going to be able to last too long unless a Kaddish Baruch Hu helps us out, and yet they were able to have that emunah. And the Rav quotes from the Tanya the idea of this idea, and the idea that matzah, the idea that matzah represents this food of emunah is in the Zohar, and he connects it to the Tanya connects it to the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos says that a baby doesn't know how to call out his father until he tastes the taste of grain. That once the baby begins eating, so then he realizes that he understands the idea that there's a father, and he could call out to his father. But what is the idea of calling out to the father? So the Rav explains that as a child is developing, they have more emunah than a person is when they're older. If you would go to a child who's growing up in their parents' house and say, you know, what are you eating tonight? So their answer is, whatever mom and dad prepares. I don't know. I just know that I'm going to have lunch in my lunchbox, and I know that I'm going to have dinner in my, that's going to be served. And that's a simple faith, as opposed to an older person's, what are you going to do for dinner? Well, I have to think about it. I'm going to go to the store. And they're involved. The child has the simple faith, as opposed to the adult that doesn't. So the Jews leaving, Yetzias Mitzrayim, leaving with only matzah, that matzah represents the idea of having emunah pshuta. Represents the idea of saying, I don't know what's going to be, but Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of us. God's going to take care of us. We're going to enter out into the desert. What are we going to eat? I don't know. But God will take care of us. So that idea of being a little naive, level of naivete, faith and feeling, that's what's represented by the matzah. That the matzah of the Seder night was maybe, you know, put it together, was about celebrating the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved with everything. And then the matzah of leaving Egypt, the matzah that they took with them, is representative of the idea, and therefore Hashem will use that power to help me out, to make sure that I'm okay, to make sure that I'm taken care of. So perhaps that, so three approaches to matzah. One, the idea of timelessness, that God represents, that's from the Sifsei Chaim, / the Maharal, the idea that matzah represents a timeless food, that Kadosh Baruch Hu makes the matzah and makes the matzah for us. You have the Rav's idea that matzah represents the immediacy, or the how fast, how quickly the geula took place, that real geulas take place very, very quickly, that you don't think it's going to happen, then all of a sudden it does happen. And then the last idea that the Rav quotes from the Baal HaTanya is that matzah represents the idea of childhood faith, that I don't know what's going to be, but I know that Kadosh Baruch Hu will take care of me, and that is the feeling that Bnei Yisrael had as they left Mitzrayim in that year. And that's it. All right, we'll stop here. Thank you.